Before time began, a cosmic war erupted in the very throne room of God. Angels of light became agents of darkness, and creation itself was torn apart by rebellion. What you're about to witness is not mythology. It's the hidden truth behind every evil that has ever plagued humanity. From the first sin to the final judgment, the fallen angels have orchestrated mankind's destruction. But their time is running out. The prophecies are unfolding, the seals are breaking, and the lake of fire awaits. This is the untold story of the greatest betrayal in history, and why every soul on earth hangs in the balance. The end has already been written, but do you know which side you're on? In the beginning, before earth was formed, before time itself began, heaven was perfect. God's throne room was filled with angels, each one created for a special purpose and role. The book of Ezekiel tells us about these amazing beings. You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of fiery stones. These weren't just any angels. They were powerful beings with different jobs, ranks, and responsibilities in God's eternal kingdom. The heavenly realm was organized in perfect order. At the highest level were the seraphim, magnificent beings with six wings who flew around God's throne. Isaiah saw them and wrote, "Above it stood seraphims. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." These creatures were pure fire, burning with holiness and completely devoted to worshipping God. Below them were the cherubim, mighty guardians of God's presence. Ezekiel describes their incredible appearance. "And everyone had four faces, and everyone had four wings, and their feet were straight feet. And the sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like the color of burnished brass." These beings had the face of a man, a lion, an ox, and an eagle, representing all of creation under God's rule. At the top of this heavenly order stood Lucifer, the morning star. He was the most beautiful angel God ever made. His body was covered with precious stones like emeralds, sapphires, and diamonds that caught and reflected God's glory. His voice was like music itself, leading all of heaven in perfect worship. The prophet Ezekiel describes him in stunning detail. "You were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Every precious stone was your covering. The sardius, topaz and diamond, beryl, onyx and jasper, sapphire, turquoise and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day you were created." Lucifer wasn't just another angel. He was the covering cherub, the one who stood closest to God's throne. His job was to lead worship and protect God's glory. He had access to places other angels couldn't go. He walked on the holy mountain of God among the fiery stones. Every part of him was created for worship, with musical instruments built into his very being. The archangels carried out God's most important commands across the universe. Michael was the warrior, Gabriel was the messenger, and others had their own special roles. Regular angels served as messengers and warriors, each one perfectly obedient and filled with joy. Everything in heaven worked together like a beautiful symphony. Each angel knew their place and loved their job. There was no jealousy, no fighting, no sadness, no confusion. When God spoke, everyone listened with perfect attention. When he gave commands, everyone obeyed with joy and excitement. This was the way things were meant to be forever and ever. But something terrible began to grow inside Lucifer's heart. Pride crept in like a deadly poison, slowly corrupting his thoughts and desires. He started looking at his own beauty instead of God's glory. He began thinking he deserved more honor, more power, more praise from the other angels. Instead of using his gifts to worship God, he started admiring himself. The Bible tells us exactly what happened in Isaiah chapter 14. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. This wasn't just a passing thought, it was a deliberate decision that grew stronger each day. Lucifer's thoughts became darker and more rebellious with each moment. He didn't just want to be like God, he wanted to replace God completely and rule the universe himself. His prideful heart spoke these terrible words, I will sit on the mount of the congregation, on the farther sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. These five I will statements showed how completely pride had taken over his mind and heart. Each declaration was a step further away from God and deeper into rebellion. I will ascend. He wanted to rise higher than his position. I will exalt my throne. He wanted his own kingdom. I will sit on the mount. He wanted God's place of authority. I will ascend above the clouds. He wanted to be higher than heaven itself. I will be like the Most High. He wanted to be God. But Lucifer was clever and cunning. He didn't keep these thoughts to himself, and he didn't rebel alone. He began whispering to other angels, planting seeds of doubt about God's leadership. He made them question whether God really deserved all the worship and honor. Why should we serve him? He whispered in their ears. Look at how powerful and beautiful we are. Don't we deserve better treatment? Shouldn't we have more freedom to do what we want? His words were like spiritual poison, infecting the minds of angels who had never questioned God before. He painted pictures of a better heaven where they would be free to do whatever they wanted. He promised them positions of power and authority if they would follow him instead of God. Slowly, quietly, he began building an army of rebels who would follow him in his plan to take over heaven. Lucifer was patient and strategic. He didn't rush into open rebellion right away. He spent time convincing angels in different ranks and positions. He appealed to their desires for more power, more recognition, more freedom. He made God's perfect rule seem like slavery and his rebellion seem like liberation. His influence spread like a spiritual virus, infecting angel after angel with the same prideful thoughts that had consumed his own heart. He turned God's perfect creation against their creator, preparing for the most terrible war heaven would ever see. The rebellion finally exploded into open war. The book of Revelation gives us a clear and dramatic picture of what happened, and war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. This wasn't a small disagreement or a minor conflict. This was total war that shook the very foundations of heaven itself. Michael the archangel, God's mighty warrior and the prince of angels, led the loyal angels against Lucifer's rebel army. Michael had served God faithfully since his creation, and he wasn't about to let a proud rebel destroy God's perfect kingdom. The battle was intense and cosmic beyond anything we can imagine. Heaven itself shook as these powerful beings clashed with weapons of light and spiritual force. Angels, who had once sung together in perfect harmony, now fought against each other in the most terrible civil war ever seen. The sound of their battle echoed through every corner of the heavenly realm. Flashes of divine power lit up the sky as armies of angels fought for the future of creation. These weren't weak beings fighting with small weapons. Angels are incredibly powerful creatures, and when they go to war, the entire universe feels it. They fought with swords of fire, shields of light, and power that could move mountains and shake stars. The loyal angels fought with righteousness and divine authority. The rebel angels fought with rage and desperation, knowing that if they lost, they would lose everything. The fight wasn't just about power or position. It was about who would rule the universe. Would it be God, the loving creator who made everything and deserved all worship? Or would it be Lucifer, the proud rebel who wanted to steal God's throne and rule according to his own selfish desires? Every angel had to choose a side. There was no middle ground, no neutral position. You were either for God or against him. As the battle raged across heaven, something heartbreaking happened. The Bible tells us that his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. These stars were angels, and a third of all God's angels chose to follow Lucifer instead of staying loyal to their Creator. Imagine the pain in God's heart as he watched his own creatures turn against him. These weren't just weak angels who were easily fooled. Some of them were powerful princes and rulers in the heavenly kingdom. They threw away their positions, their honor, their eternal joy, and their future for a lie. But God's power was infinite, and the outcome was never really in doubt. Michael and his angels fought with divine authority behind them, while Lucifer's forces fought against their own creator. The war ended with total and complete defeat for the rebels. God's power was far greater than anything Lucifer could imagine or overcome. All of his planning, all of his convincing, all of his promises to his followers meant nothing when faced with the infinite power of the Almighty. The moment of judgment came swiftly and decisively. As Revelation 12:9 records, "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." The fall from heaven to earth was not gentle or gradual. Like lightning striking the ground with tremendous force, Lucifer and his followers were hurled down from the highest heaven to the lowest earth. The distance was not just physical, but spiritual, from the place of perfect light and joy to a realm of darkness and sorrow. Jesus himself witnessed this dramatic moment and later told his disciples, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven." This wasn't just a change of location. It was a complete transformation of identity and nature. The beautiful morning star became a dark prince of lies and deception. His name changed from Lucifer, meaning light bearer, to Satan, meaning adversary and opponent. He who had once led worship now became the enemy of everything good and holy. All the angels who had rebelled were transformed in that terrible instant. Their bodies of light became twisted and dark. Their beautiful voices that had once praised God became harsh and evil, capable only of lies and curses. They lost their positions of honor and became outcasts, banned forever from God's presence. The magnificent wings that had carried them in joyful service now became symbols of their fallen state. The perfect beings they once were became demons, filled with hatred and bent on destroying everything good God had made. Their punishment was complete and final. They could never return to heaven, never again stand in God's presence, never again know the joy and peace they had thrown away. The door was closed forever, and there was no second chance, no possibility of redemption for them. But their story was far from over. Cast down to earth in rage and desperation, they would now turn their fury against God's newest and most beloved creation, humanity. If they couldn't have heaven, they would make sure that humans couldn't have it either. If they couldn't worship God, they would try to stop everyone else from worshiping him too. Their rebellion had failed, but their war against God was just beginning in a new and terrible way. Once on earth, the fallen angels didn't just sit around feeling sorry for themselves or accept their punishment quietly. They immediately began their work of corruption and revenge. They looked at God's beautiful creation, the perfect world he had made for humanity, and decided to ruin it completely. They saw how much God loved human beings, and their jealous hatred drove them to destroy that relationship. If they couldn't have heaven, they would make sure earth became a hell. The fallen angels possessed knowledge and power that was never meant for human minds. They knew secrets about the spiritual realm, about the future, about forces and powers that could harm or control. They understood how creation worked in ways that humans were never supposed to know. And they were determined to use this forbidden knowledge as a weapon against humanity. Genesis chapter 6 gives us a clear glimpse of what started happening. Now it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives of all whom they chose. These sons of God were the fallen angels who had taken physical form to carry out their plan of corruption. This wasn't just about attraction or desire, it was a calculated attack on God's design for humanity. They didn't just observe humans. From a distance, they interfered directly with God's plan by mixing their spiritual nature with human flesh. This created a corruption that went beyond anything God had intended or designed. The very foundation of human life was being twisted and polluted by these rebel angels who refused to accept their defeat. They were determined to corrupt the human race so completely that God would have to destroy his own creation. It was the ultimate act of revenge against the God who had cast them out of heaven. If they couldn't attack God directly, they would attack what he loved most, his human children. They would poison the bloodline, corrupt the genetics, and destroy the purity that God had built into humanity. This wasn't random destruction. It was a strategic plan to force God's hand. They knew that God's justice required him to judge sin, and they were creating so much sin and corruption that God would have no choice but to destroy the earth. In their twisted thinking, they believed they could force God to become the destroyer of his own creation. They would make God choose between his justice and his love, and either way, they would consider it a victory. Among the fallen angels, there was a special group called the Watchers. These were angels whose original job was to watch over humanity and report back to God about how his newest creation was doing. They were supposed to be guardians and protectors, making sure humans were safe and following God's ways. But after the fall, they became something much more dangerous and evil. The Book of Enoch, which Jude quotes in the New Testament, tells us they made a terrible oath together on Mount Hermon. This wasn't a casual decision, it was a formal covenant of evil. 200 of these watchers gathered on this mountain and swore to corrupt mankind completely and thoroughly. They knew this would bring God's judgment on them, but they didn't care. Their hatred for God was stronger than their fear of punishment. They divided up their evil work like a twisted business plan, each one taking responsibility for different areas of corruption. Azazel would teach humans how to make weapons of war, swords, knives, shields, and armor. He would show them how to kill each other more efficiently. Semjaza would show them enchantments and root cutting for magical purposes. Armaros would teach the resolving of enchantments and counter magic. Barakijal would teach astrology and how to read the stars for fortune-telling. Kokabel would teach the constellations and their supposed meanings. Ezekiel would teach the knowledge of the clouds and weather control. Arakiel would teach the signs of the earth and how to interpret natural phenomena for divination. Shamsiel would teach the signs of the sun and solar magic. Sariel would teach the course of the moon and lunar magic. Each one had their specialty in corrupting human knowledge. Others focused on different areas of corruption. Some would show humans how to use makeup and jewelry to increase vanity and lust, turning natural beauty into a trap for sin. Some taught astrology and the reading of signs in the sky, turning humans away from trusting God to trusting in false predictions. Others revealed the secrets of magic and witchcraft, giving humans power that came from demons instead of God. Jude warns us about these rebels in his letter, "And the angels who did not keep their proper domain, but left their own abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day." These watchers didn't just fall from heaven accidentally. They actively chose to leave their assigned place and corrupt the Earth. They abandoned their responsibility to protect humans and instead became their destroyers. Their punishment would be severe and eternal, but first, they would cause tremendous damage to God's creation. They would introduce knowledge and practices that would spread like poison through the human race, creating generations of corruption and evil that would require God's direct intervention to stop. The mixing of fallen angels with human women produced something monstrous and unnatural. Genesis 6:4 tells us there were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old men of renown. These giants, called Nephilim in Hebrew, were not normal humans at all. They were hybrid creatures that should never have existed. They were huge beyond anything natural, powerful beyond human limits, and completely evil in their hearts and minds. They had supernatural strength and abilities from their angelic fathers, mixed with human appetites and desires from their mothers. But their appetites were twisted and terrible, growing far beyond anything normal or healthy. They didn't just eat food like regular people. They consumed everything in their path, including other humans. Their hunger was never satisfied, and their desires were always evil. Some of these giants grew to be 15 feet tall, others 20 feet, and some even taller than that. Their strength was beyond anything a normal human could imagine or resist. They could tear apart armies, destroy cities, and kill hundreds of people without breaking a sweat. But their size and strength weren't the worst things about them. Their hearts were filled with evil and violence that came straight from their demonic fathers. Every thought they had was about causing pain, fear, and destruction. They took pleasure in hurting innocent people and making others suffer. They were like walking nightmares that terrorized everyone around them. The earth became filled with violence like never before in history. Genesis 6:11 tells us, "The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence." These giants terrorized normal people, taking whatever they wanted and destroying anyone who tried to oppose them. They built cities and kingdoms based entirely on fear and power. They made themselves kings and rulers, forcing people to worship them and serve their evil desires. They taught humans new ways to sin, new ways to hurt each other, new ways to rebel against God. They introduced warfare on a scale never seen before. They showed humans how to be cruel and heartless. They spread their evil influence everywhere they went, corrupting not just individuals, but entire civilizations. Every thought of their hearts was only evil continually, just like the Bible says about humanity in general during this time. But the giants were worse because they had supernatural power to make their evil thoughts reality. They turned God's beautiful world into a nightmare of horror and bloodshed, all because the fallen angels refused to accept their punishment and stay away from human affairs. The violence wasn't just physical, it was spiritual and moral too. They corrupted human nature itself, introducing levels of evil that humans had never known before. They made cruelty normal, made violence entertainment, and made evil seem attractive and powerful. The beautiful world God had created was becoming a hell on earth. God watched all this happening from heaven, and his heart was filled with grief beyond description. The Bible tells us in Genesis 6:6, "And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart." This wasn't the world he had planned when he created everything. This wasn't the future he wanted for humanity when he breathed life into Adam. This wasn't the relationship he desired with his human children. The corruption was spreading faster than a disease. The giants were multiplying and growing stronger. The forbidden knowledge was being passed down through generations. Normal humans were learning to be as evil as their supernatural oppressors. Something had to be done before the corruption spread even further and destroyed every trace of goodness and purity on earth. But God didn't act in anger alone, and he didn't make hasty decisions. He acted with a plan that would accomplish multiple purposes at the same time: save humanity, judge the rebels, and start fresh with a clean earth. Genesis 6:7 records his decision. So the Lord said, "I will destroy man whom I have created. From the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them." The judgment would be complete and thorough, washing away all the corruption. Yet even in this moment of universal judgment, God showed mercy and grace. He found one man who was still righteous, still uncorrupted, still faithful, Noah. The Bible says Noah was perfect in his generations, meaning his family line hadn't been corrupted by the fallen angels. His genetic makeup was still purely human, and his heart was still devoted to God. Genesis 6:9 tells us Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. God would use Noah and his family to start over, to give humanity a fresh beginning, free from the corruption of the giants and the fallen angels. He gave Noah detailed instructions for building an ark that would save him, his family, and representatives of all the animal kinds. The flood was coming, and it would wash away all the corruption the fallen angels had brought to earth. But even as God prepared to cleanse the earth, the story of the fallen angels was far from over. Their judgment was certain, but their influence would continue in new and different ways. The war between good and evil, between God's kingdom and Satan's rebellion, would continue until the very end of time itself. God's justice moved swiftly and decisively against the watchers who had corrupted humanity through their forbidden teachings and unholy unions. These fallen angels, who had deliberately left their assigned heavenly positions, would face a special punishment that was far different and more severe than the other demons roaming the earth. They had committed the ultimate crime by abandoning their sacred duties and corrupting God's perfect creation with forbidden knowledge and genetic pollution. The Apostle Peter tells us exactly what happened to them. For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, the mighty archangels became God's chosen executioners of divine justice in this cosmic punishment. Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Uriel received their orders directly from the throne of God himself. Each one had a specific role in carrying out the sentence against these rebels who had violated the fundamental laws of heaven and earth. They moved with the full authority of heaven behind them, and absolutely nothing could stop, delay, or interfere. With their divine mission, these mighty warriors who had fought alongside Michael in the great war against Satan now had a new and terrible task: to ensure that the worst offenders among the fallen angels faced immediate and permanent punishment. The binding of these watchers wasn't accomplished with ordinary chains made of metal that could rust, break, or be escaped from. These were supernatural chains of spiritual darkness, forged by God's own infinite power and specifically designed to hold beings of immense spiritual strength and cunning. 2 Peter describes their hopeless condition. God did not spare angels when they sinned, but sent them to hell, putting them in chains of darkness to be held for judgment. These chains were absolutely unbreakable, eternal in their duration, and actually grew tighter and more restrictive with every attempt to escape or break free. The prison prepared specifically for the watchers was located deep beneath the earth's surface, in a place the Bible calls Tartarus, a realm of spiritual torment and darkness. This wasn't just a dark cave or underground chamber that humans might discover. It was a spiritual prison existing in another dimension, designed specifically for fallen angels who had committed the most serious crimes against heaven. The Book of Enoch describes in detail how they were bound hand and foot with unbreakable chains and cast into the deep valleys and chasms of the earth, where they would remain in agony until the final judgment at the end of time. this imprisonment wasn't temporary detention or a holding period before trial. It was permanent, eternal imprisonment until the end of time itself. Jude confirms their hopeless fate with these words. And the angels who did not keep their proper domain, but left their own abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. The watchers who had once taught humanity forbidden knowledge about warfare, magic, astrology, and corruption, now faced an eternity of complete darkness, silence, and isolation, unable to continue their destructive influence on God's creation. The archangels carried out their divine task with perfect precision, unwavering determination, and absolute authority from the throne of God. One by one, each of the 200 watchers was seized, bound with chains of darkness, and dragged, screaming, to their underground prison. Their cries of rage and curses echoed through the earth as they finally realized their fate was completely sealed, and there would be no escape, no appeal, no second chance. They had thought they were powerful enough to corrupt God's creation without facing any consequences, but now they learned the hard truth that God's justice always wins in the end, no matter how long it takes. The time for divine judgment had finally come upon the entire corrupted earth. God looked down from heaven at the world filled with violence, corruption, and the hybrid offspring of fallen angels, and he made the difficult decision to start over. Completely with a clean slate, the situation had become so utterly hopeless that every thought of man's heart was only evil continually, and the very genetic foundation of humanity was being polluted beyond repair. Genesis records his solemn decision, and God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth." The great flood wasn't just heavy rain or a local disaster affecting one region. It was a cosmic event of unimaginable magnitude that completely reshaped the entire world and reset the course of human history. This was divine judgment on a scale never seen before or since, affecting every living creature on the planet. Genesis 7:11 describes the incredible magnitude of this world-changing event. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. The waters came simultaneously from above and below, covering everything that had the breath of life. For 40 days and 40 nights without interruption, the rain poured down from heaven with unstoppable force. But the water didn't just come from the sky above. The massive deep underground springs and fountains burst open with tremendous power, adding their enormous flow to the deluge from above. The highest mountains disappeared completely under the rising waters. Entire cities built by the giants over generations were swallowed up and lost forever beneath the waves. Every trace of the corrupted civilization that had polluted the earth vanished completely beneath the universal flood. The earth that had been contaminated by fallen angel DNA and forbidden knowledge was being thoroughly washed clean by God's judgment. The mighty Nephilim giants, those supernatural beings who had terrorized normal humanity for generations with their violence and cannibalism, suddenly found that all their incredible strength and size meant absolutely nothing against the unstoppable power of God's righteous judgment. They couldn't swim to safety because there was no safety anywhere on the entire earth. They couldn't build boats fast enough or towers high enough to escape the rising waters. Genesis 7:21 tells us the complete result. And all flesh died that moved on the earth, birds and cattle and beasts and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and every man. Noah's massive ark became the single vessel of God's mercy in the midst of his universal judgment. For exactly 120 years, faithful Noah had built this enormous ship according to God's precise specifications, measuring 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. People had mocked him relentlessly for building a boat in a place where there was no ocean, calling him crazy, foolish, and deluded. But now, his patient obedience to God's command saved his life and secured the future of the entire human race. Genesis 7:23 records the complete devastation. So he destroyed all living things which were on the face of the ground, both man and cattle, creeping thing and bird of the air. They were destroyed from the earth. Only Noah and those who were with him in the ark remained alive. The global flood lasted for exactly 150 days before the waters finally began to recede and dry land appeared once again. When Noah and his family finally stepped off the ark onto the completely transformed ground, they were walking on an entirely new earth that had been cleansed of all corruption. All the genetic pollution was gone forever. All the violent giants were dead and buried. All the forbidden knowledge and evil technologies had been washed away and lost. God had given humanity a fresh start, a completely clean slate, and a brand new beginning, free from the destructive influence of the fallen watchers and their corrupted offspring. When the floodwaters finally killed all the Nephilim giants, something completely unexpected and deeply troubling happened that would create new problems for humanity. Because these creatures were unnatural hybrids, half fallen angel and half human, their deaths created a situation that had never occurred before in God's creation. The Book of Enoch explains that when the giants died in the flood, their spirits didn't go to the same place as normal human spirits at death. Instead, they became wandering, restless demons trapped on the earth, filled with endless rage and supernatural hunger. These disembodied spirits of the dead giants were fundamentally different from the original fallen angels in several important ways. They had never lived in the glorious presence of God in heaven, so they had no memory of perfect peace, joy, or divine worship. They had never experienced the beauty and harmony of the celestial realm, so they didn't understand what they had. Lost through rebellion, all they had ever known was the earth, violence, corruption, and an endless appetite for destruction that could never be satisfied. They became the demons that would plague and torment humanity for thousands of years to come. Unlike the watchers who were bound in chains and imprisoned in the depths of the earth, these demon spirits of the dead giants were completely free to roam throughout the earth and cause whatever trouble they could. But they faced a serious and desperate problem that drove them to constant frustration. They no longer had physical bodies to inhabit or control. They were trapped between the spiritual and physical worlds, desperately seeking human hosts to possess so they could once again experience physical sensations, emotions, and the ability to influence the material world around them. Jesus encountered these demons regularly throughout his earthly ministry and revealed their true nature and desperate spiritual condition to his disciples. When he cast out a legion of demons from one tormented man, they begged him desperately not to send them to the abyss, where they would be completely cut off from the physical world. Luke 8:31 records their terrified plea, and they begged him that he would not command them to go out into the abyss. They feared returning to the purely spiritual realm because they craved physical existence and the ability to influence and corrupt the material world. These demon spirits became Satan's invisible army and his primary foot soldiers in the ongoing spiritual war against humanity. They carried out his orders to whisper lies into people's minds, promote violence and hatred between individuals and nations, encourage rebellion against God's authority, and attempt to possess anyone who opened their heart to evil influences. They continued the same work of corruption and destruction that their giant fathers and fallen angel grandfathers had started before the flood. The spiritual warfare that had begun in heaven with Lucifer's original rebellion had now moved to earth in a new and much more subtle form. Instead of mighty angels fighting openly with swords of light and divine power, the battle was now fought invisibly in human hearts, minds, and souls. The demons sought to destroy people from the inside out through temptation, lies, and spiritual oppression, while God's holy angels worked constantly to protect and guide those who remained faithful to their Creator. This is exactly why Jesus taught his disciples to pray with these important words, "And do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one." The spiritual danger was absolutely real. The demonic enemy was constantly active and seeking victims, and the battle for human souls had begun in earnest on a scale never before seen in human history. After the great flood cleansed the earth, Satan found himself operating in a completely different position and context than he had before. He was no longer just a rebel angel causing trouble and chaos in heaven through human sin and disobedience. He had actually become the prince and ruler of this world system. When Adam and Eve chose to disobey God's clear command in the Garden of Eden, they had essentially handed over the dominion and authority that God had originally given them to Satan himself. Now he ruled over the earth and its kingdoms, but his rule had definite boundaries and limitations that God had established and enforced. Jesus himself acknowledged Satan's temporary but real authority over earthly kingdoms when he was tempted. In the wilderness, after fasting for 40 days, Satan showed him all the kingdoms of the world in their glory and power, then made this bold claim, "All this authority I will give you and their glory, for this has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish." Satan wasn't lying, exaggerating, or bluffing about his power. He really did have significant authority over the world's governments, economic systems, and political structures, but only because humanity had given it to him through their rebellion against God. However, Satan's authority wasn't absolute, unlimited, or without restrictions by any means. God had set clear and unmovable boundaries that he couldn't cross without specific permission from heaven. The book of Job provides us with a perfect example of exactly how this spiritual authority structure worked in practice. When Satan wanted to attack and test the righteous man Job, he was required to ask God's permission first, like a prosecutor requesting permission from a judge. Job 1:12 records God's specific response and the exact limits he placed on Satan's actions. And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person." Satan continued his relentless work of corruption and destruction after the flood. But now he was forced to be much more subtle, strategic, and indirect in his methods. He could no longer simply send massive armies of Nephilim giants to terrorize and destroy people through brute force. Those days were permanently over. Instead, he was forced to work through human governments, false religious systems, corrupt leaders, and deceptive ideologies. He promoted lies about God's character and convinced people that sin represented freedom and self-expression instead of slavery and destruction. The Apostle Paul clearly explains Satan's new methods and strategies in his letter to the Ephesians. "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." The battle had become completely invisible to human eyes, but remained just as real, dangerous, and consequential as the original war in heaven between Michael's forces and the dragon's army. Satan also used his extensive knowledge of human nature, psychology, and weakness to tempt people in their most vulnerable areas. Having observed humanity since the Garden of Eden, he knew exactly which lies, temptations, and deceptions would appeal most strongly to each person's specific weaknesses in pride, greed, lust, or fear. 1 John 2:16 describes his threefold strategy perfectly. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. Despite all his accumulated power, intelligence, and cunning developed over thousands of years, Satan was fighting a battle that he had already lost from the very beginning. God had already promised back in the Garden of Eden that the woman's seed would eventually crush the serpent's head completely. Every single day that passed brought him closer to his final, total defeat and eternal punishment. He knew his time was limited and running out, which made him increasingly desperate, reckless, and dangerous in his attacks against God's people. God had revealed to his chosen prophets throughout history exactly how Satan's rebellion would finally end and what the climactic events of the last days would look like. The book of Revelation provides us with detailed information about the final chapters of the cosmic rebellion that began in heaven with Lucifer's pride. During the end times, Satan would be permitted by God to make one last desperate attempt to prove his accusations against God and rally his remaining forces for a final, all-out battle against the Creator. The Apostle John saw a terrifying vision of future events when the bottomless pit would be opened and the imprisoned demons would be temporarily released to torment the earth. Revelation 9:1-2 describes this earth-shaking event in vivid detail. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit, like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. The demons that had been bound in darkness since the days of Noah and the flood would suddenly be free to roam the earth again, but only for a short, specific time period, and only by God's direct permission and purpose, they would cause tremendous suffering, chaos, and destruction across the entire world. But their temporary release would ultimately serve God's greater purposes in bringing about the final judgment of sin, rebellion, and evil. Even in this moment of apparent victory for Satan's forces, they would still be operating within God's sovereign plan and timeline. During this period of intense tribulation, Satan would also establish his ultimate deception and final rebellion. The beast system that would demand worship and complete allegiance from every person on earth. Revelation 13:4 tells us about the world's response. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" This would be Satan's final, desperate attempt to steal the worship and allegiance that belongs only to God alone. The beast system would successfully unite all the world's governments, religions, and economic systems under Satan's direct control and authority. People everywhere would be forced to make the ultimate choice between worshiping the beast and receiving his mark, or remaining faithful to God and facing severe persecution, economic exclusion, and even death. It would be the final test of human loyalty throughout history. Would people choose temporary comfort and safety within Satan's system, or would they remain faithful to God regardless of the personal cost? But even this final worldwide rebellion would be strictly limited by God's predetermined timeline and sovereign purposes. Revelation 12:12 contains this ominous warning, "Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time." Satan's time was rapidly running out, and his growing desperation would make him more dangerous, violent, and destructive than ever before in human history. The final climax would come when Satan gathered all the armies of the entire earth for the Battle of Armageddon, believing that he could finally defeat God through superior numbers and military might. But his carefully planned strategy would end in complete and utter disaster when Jesus Christ returned to earth in power and glory as the conquering King of Kings and Lord of Lords, accompanied by all the armies of heaven. Jesus Christ himself revealed the ultimate destiny that had been prepared specifically for Satan and all his followers throughout history. In Matthew 25:41, Christ spoke about the final judgment with absolute divine authority. Then he will also say to those on the left hand, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." This eternal fire wasn't originally created for human beings. It was specifically designed and prepared for spiritual beings who had chosen to rebel against their Creator and refuse His offer of forgiveness. The lake of fire represents the most terrifying and severe punishment described anywhere in all of Scripture. Revelation 20:10 describes Satan's final fate with absolutely chilling clarity. The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. There would be absolutely no escape, no possibility of second chances, no end to the punishment, no hope of parole, mercy, or reduced sentence throughout all eternity. Before this final sentence was carried out, every single created being who had ever lived would be required to stand before God's great white throne of judgment for final evaluation and sentencing. The books would be opened, and every action, every word, every thought, every secret motive, and every hidden deed would be thoroughly examined under God's perfect justice and absolute holiness. Revelation 20:12 describes this awesome and terrifying scene. "And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works, by the things which were written in the books. Even death itself and hell would be thrown into the lake of fire, demonstrating that God's victory was absolutely complete, final and eternal." Revelation 20:14 declares with finality, "Then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death." The second death would mean eternal separation from God, eternal conscious punishment, and eternal existence in outer darkness. For all who had chosen rebellion over obedience, lies over truth, and Satan over God. The fallen angels, who had originally started this entire cosmic rebellion, would face the harshest and most severe punishment of all created beings. They had known God's glory personally and intimately, had lived in His immediate presence, had experienced perfect joy, peace, and fulfillment, and had deliberately thrown it all away for pride, selfish ambition, and the desire to be worshipped themselves. Their punishment would perfectly match the magnitude of their sin and the incredible privilege they had rejected. For Satan specifically, this would represent the ultimate humiliation and complete defeat of everything he had worked toward for thousands of years. The being who had arrogantly declared, "I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, I will be like the Most High," would be cast into the lowest place of punishment in all creation. The one who had promised his followers freedom, power, and godlike status would instead lead them into eternal slavery, torment, and hopeless misery. His rebellion that had seemed so powerful, threatening, and successful would end in complete and utter defeat, proving that God's word is always true and His justice always prevails. After all rebellion was finally crushed and punished forever, God would create something absolutely magnificent, perfect, and eternal. The Apostle John saw this glorious vision of the future and carefully recorded it in Revelation 21:1. "Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also, there was no more sea. This wouldn't be merely a repair job or renovation of the old, corrupted creation. It would be completely new, absolutely perfect, and designed to last forever without any possibility of corruption or decay. This new creation would be completely free from every trace of corruption, pollution, and evil that the fallen angels had brought into the world through their rebellion. There would be no more violence of any kind, no more forbidden knowledge or dangerous technologies, no more temptation from demons, no more sin, suffering, or rebellion of any kind. Isaiah had prophesied this glorious day centuries before. For, behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered or come to mind. God himself would dwell directly with his people in this new creation in a way that had never been possible since the Garden of Eden. Revelation 21:3 describes this incredible and wonderful reality. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God." The perfect relationship between God and humanity that Satan had tried to destroy in the garden would be completely restored forever, but even better and more intimate than before. All the pain, suffering, and sorrow that rebellion had caused throughout human history would be completely removed and permanently forgotten. Revelation 21:4 contains this wonderful and comforting promise, "And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away." Every negative consequence of sin and rebellion would be completely erased from existence forever. The new Jerusalem would descend from heaven as the magnificent capital city of God's eternal kingdom. Its gates would never need to be closed because there would be no enemies to fear, no rebels to keep out, no danger of any kind. Its streets would be made of pure gold. Its foundations would be precious stones of every kind, and its light would come directly from God's glory itself rather than the sun or moon. Most importantly of all, the curse that had fallen on all creation because of sin would be completely lifted and permanently removed. Revelation 22:3 declares with joy, "And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him." The perfect order and harmony that had existed before Satan's rebellion would be completely restored, but this time it would be eternal, unshakable, and absolutely secure forever. The ultimate and final victory would belong completely to Jesus Christ, the Lamb of God, who had conquered sin, death, hell, and Satan himself through his sacrifice and resurrection. Paul describes his complete and total triumph in Colossians 2:15. Having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it. Every fallen angel, every demon, every evil power, and every force of darkness would be completely and permanently defeated by the one they had tried so desperately to destroy. Christ's magnificent victory would be graciously shared with his people, those who had remained faithful and loyal through all the trials, tribulations, and persecutions of history. Revelation 3:21 contains his amazing promise to overcomers. "To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne." The redeemed from every nation and time period would rule and reign with Christ throughout eternity as co-heirs of God's glorious kingdom. The bride of Christ, composed of all true believers from every nation, tribe, and language throughout history, would be presented to him in perfect purity, beauty, and holiness. Ephesians 5:27 describes this glorious wedding moment, that he might present her to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. The worship that Satan had tried to steal from the very beginning would finally be pure, unhindered, and eternal. Every created being who remained in God's kingdom would bow before Christ and joyfully acknowledge his absolute authority over all creation. Philippians 2:10-11 prophesies this universal moment of worship, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow, of those in heaven and of those on earth and of those under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. The tree of life that had been carefully guarded by cherubim with flaming swords since Adam and Eve's sin would be freely available again to all who entered the new creation. Revelation 22:2 describes it standing majestically in the middle of its street, and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Perfect harmony, peace, and joy would be permanently restored throughout all creation for eternity. The lion would lie down peacefully with the lamb, children would play safely with dangerous animals, and there would be no hurt, destruction, or violence anywhere in God's holy mountain. The cosmic rebellion that began with one angel's pride and infected one third of heaven would finally end with perfect peace, love, and worship that would continue forever and ever without end.